So now we will start with the talk. I am happy to introduce Rick van Rijn. He told me that he had the idea for this talk at the last Netherlands camp, where he saw that there is a lot of apathy, especially amongst younger people, concerning climate change. So he thought about what he could do about it. So this talk is a roller coaster ride through a few years of experience in teaching the government about their obligations with respect to climate change. It details the procedural hacks that they use and ways to evade them. It also gives examples of elegantly designed cases with a potential of very high impact. Climate law is a domain of logic, language, and social ethics, all available in the average hacker's toolbox. I'd argue the world needs our minds to lap up the debris left behind by our governments. So that was the introduction text to that. So about you, Rick van Rijn. You're a self-employed cryptographer at Open Fortress, mostly active in open source and open protocols. Your aim is to make security and privacy free and available to all. That is free as in free beer, but also free as in free speech, not subjected to commercial interests. So Rick holds an MSc and PhD degrees in computer science with emphasis on electrical engineering and mathematics. Rick originally started his education at the most pragmatic LTS level, electrical engineering, and advanced via MTS electronics and HTSP technical computer science to university study in computer science. The combination of pragmatics with theory are markers of Rick's work. So, now I can give the stage to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I was really struck last conference, the MCH, by young people being apathetic about climate change. People of my age getting aggressive, or at least very negative. And I thought, none of this is constructive. And I thought to myself, I've always tried to be resource conscious, but apparently there's more needed. And I gave up at that point the belief that our government is going to fix it. The Dutch government in this case, but it applies everywhere. Some countries more than others, like America. So I started to think, how do you force the government? There are often lawsuits, but they are being ignored by governments. So we have a trio of politicos in the Netherlands. We have the government, the politicians in government making laws. We have an executive branch of civil servants who execute the laws. They actually effect change. And of course, we have the judges that tell the government, you are not doing your stuff properly. When they say this to the politicians, they say you should make laws, and they don't. If they are at all present and doing something, because half the time we don't have a government. And otherwise, they can't make up their mind because they're so internally divided. What we are entitled to is effective and timely, as if that's going to be happening, effective and timely climate change mitigation measures. And we are not getting them. And that's actually what the executive office should be doing. Except that they say we need policy to do this. But policy comes from the government, from the politics, trickles down into the executive branch, into civil servants. But the judges can push on it from the other side. That's what administrative law does. So that's what we've been doing. I've joined Scientist Rebellion to actually start doing these things. And there are no final results, because this stuff takes years. And still we are pushing, and we can tell that we're a nuisance, because sometimes they're like, oh gosh, we didn't know we were so bad. Maybe if you're Dutch, you've heard that the Klimaat en Energieverkenning by our scientific evaluation office for government policy, PBL, they published a report saying that basically the chance that we're meeting the rather flimsy European target was going to be met with less than 5% chance. In terms of science, it is proven to be a failure. If you look up the Green Deal in the law papers, it's 55% is the minimum, so it should have been 55%, the probability should have been 95% or more. So instead of proving that they protect us, they have proven that they are not protecting us. This stuff helps in court. And this is part of a Cantabel 2, a table with even more failures that we have in our country. We knew this was coming because we'd been inspecting the previous version of this report. And, well, there's stuff with probability, so it's quite unclear. But we could figure out there was 7-8% chance that we were actually going to mitigate climate change in the Netherlands, as far as it's our point, making the 55%. So what we have done as Scientist Rebellion, we've stepped out to PBL and asked them, can you please evaluate the probability that all these legal obligations are being met? And that ended up in that table. And it's been devastating. It's been very clearly supported by the College of Human Rights in the Netherlands. It's come to a very clear statement from the Supreme Court in the Netherlands that do more, you're not doing enough, terrible. Cabinet said, we really need to make new plans. And after a few months, they said, yeah, I don't think we can do it right now. We'll have to do that later. Which, of course, is a nuisance because we have the right to timely mitigation measures. But, so we asked them. By the time the A12 got blocked, a few weeks before, we started thinking, can't we ask the government in the proper way, using their procedures, to stop handing out fossil subsidies, the thing that was day 12 blockages were about, using administrative law. So asking the executive branch to stop handing out these, taking these decisions to hand out these things. But if you ask it that way, it's very easily considered something political, and no judge will make a political decision. They will only say, it's certainly wrong what you're doing. They won't say, yeah, I sort of agree with them. They will not get into the subjective area. They only do the marginal checking of the things that government does. So we devised a trick. We've asked the government, the executive branch, to maintain a list of effective climate mitigation procedures and make it open to the public so that anyone could inject ideas there, give politics full freedom in sorting it, allowing politics to do something else instead, but at least do something, because now they do nothing, and that should not be an option. So we said, you have an obligation to mitigate climate change, so then you have to fall back to this list or some other form of policy. And they thought it was a bit of a complicated thing. It sort of shrugs against the trias politicas and such. It doesn't, by the way. It sets a minimum, whereas the trias politicas is about the maximum permissions that the three branches have. So it is not, but you don't get a response in this time. There are procedures for that. You just send them a final notice. After that, you give them, you pull them into court, you force them to a decision. This is now at the Supreme Court, at the stage of you should take a decision, and that's all taking very long. It's been there for a year already. But this is a trick to have a sort of indirection, because if you have a list and you ask the judge, please put this proposal on the list, then the judge doesn't have to make a political decision, because the ordering or overruling is done by politics. The only thing they can't do is not make a decision. Now, when we did that, we based this on a treaty, the Aarhus Treaty, that says we have right to... in response to this, because we took them to court, they finally said, we were a bit late responding, but we are actually on a course for 46 to 57% reduction. This was this report by KIV 2023 that they mentioned. So if you look at that range, the 55% is in there. That's how we got to about 7-8%, because of course that has a particular shape. It's actually triangular, but whatever. So we thought, this isn't working. Also, you have IPCC stating a 50% probability policy to maintaining 1.5 degrees. You have a European goal that's actually aligned with 2 degrees and hoping for 1.5. And then you have the Dutch not even making that. So there's sliding interest. The policies build on top of each other and you lose something underway every time. So we told them that actually this 8% means that you're probably doing 1.25% in reality because there's too many layers of laws. So, they said, but politics has a few ideas and that should be good for another 4%, according to them. We have gut feelings now being mixed in with a very thorough scientific analysis by an independent bureau. Sorry, we're not taking that. So we asked PBL, what do you think about this? This isn't right, right? So we got a nice letter stating, indeed, this is not the way this is done. So very polite, they stayed neutral, but at the very least they supported this. That went straight to court, of course. We're currently still working on that. Now, what's important about why do this legally? Why do NGOs go to court? That's because government inherently is not about truth, really. It's not about physics, it's not about science, it's about law. We have a state of law, and that's a good thing because it makes our state consistent. But it means that all the real things need to trickle in, and that's the task of politics, and that's the task they're not doing, especially with climate change. And that's why we're so opinionated. Held back a word. The IPCC knowledge is scientific, but it's widely acknowledged by court and government, so that's good. Maybe with the exception of a banana republic here and there. But politics is not enacting it, and that means that we went to the civil service instead. So we got a few things meanwhile. The Klimasignor in a case was a very big one. That's human rights. That applies to the at least to the Council of Europe, which is EU plus, sort of extra countries added. And they said, keep cumulative emissions within a budget. They copied that from the IPCC. I had the paragraph numbers if you want to look it up. And build this into a feedback control loop. Thank you. That's exactly what we need to do. Government, do your work. Do this. And this is part of human rights, so people can demand it. That's very important. If a state has an obligation, then you still need to have a way to claim it. And that means you need something like human rights to say, I am being hurt in my human rights. The International Court of Justice applied that structure too. Some other fireworks is said. Governments can decide what to do about climate change mitigation, but not whether to do something. They say it in more words, but you can look that up, but that's what it comes down to. And even elected leaders cannot overrule human rights because it's international, that's higher. And that's also very useful, very harsh also for a judge to say something, but this is the law, so they say it. And it's good law. And government decisions must heavily weigh climate change. If they don't, they failed, at least where the climate is concerned. So that's a good one, because that's a procedural mistake, and you can detect them on that. And we do. So in 2024, we sent an information request, VOO we call it in the Netherlands, to the government asking, can you please tell us what you're doing about the carbon budget and its regulation? We sent them a bit of open source code or open protocol specification. You could do it like this. Perfectly willing to talk with you about that. And it ended up to a visit where we actually got to rub in the percentages, and they were shocked about that. But then the formally proper answer is, we have no documentation on that. That is a legally justified answer to an information request. So we are like, how else are we going to push them? Because they have a positive obligation. We shouldn't have to ask for it, so they are really failing. So we decided early this year, to just ask the government, please tell us what the carbon budget for the Netherlands is. It's extremely concrete, it's a number. It applies to the people on the market, so it applies to others than just the government, so it's not policy, so you have to answer this. As far as we're concerned, this is all a matter of interpretation, of course. And we didn't get a response for the 8-week deadlines. That's about a month ago, 2 months ago. We sent them a final notice. That's the proper procedure. You may have forgotten it. You have 2 more weeks. They didn't respond. They usually don't, because executive staff isn't exactly trained to do this, because they have no policy. But policy is the internal responsibility of government. We don't care. Make your policy if you feel like it, but at least take the decision that we're asking for, and that's basically our approach. So that just went to court last week. We're very eager about the COP30 coming up, because there's a lot of pressure on countries now to actually do the right thing, to actually get to the international overarching 1.5 degrees. Because that's another thing, meanwhile, we got four. I mean, you wait and you get even more law. The International Court of Justice just a few weeks ago said very harsh things that we really love to see. The Paris Agreement has to be interpreted as saying 1.5 degrees Celsius is the goal. Thank you. We knew that all along, but because the Paris Agreement basically says we should follow the best current evidence from science, and that is quite clear, 1.5 degrees. Also, politicians do agree, that just doesn't mean they want to be bound to it, but now they are bound to it. And the countries' pledges together must work out a way of getting to 1.5 degrees. So those are the nationally determined contributions to NDCs, which we didn't submit, and that's also a procedure failure. The court knows that too, by now. And other countries, which are not in the Paris Agreement, there are a few banana republics that choose to go out, they must cooperate on the grounds of other treaties of which they are a part. And that's very useful, because it means that we can make up the mind without disturbing factors and then tell them, sorry, you are entangled in so many other things as well. You will have to do this as well. And that's because it's an international problem. It makes sense, right? It's a global problem that must be solved globally. You can't have outliers. You can't have ignoramias. And the status of this, it's called obligation of state, by the way, but it's an opinion. So it's not a ruling. Nobody got punished. But it's an interpretation of legal documents that were already there, that apply internationally, and is made by an authoritative court in international law. Meaning, read the Paris Agreement again with this interpretation and act accordingly. That's basically what they said. And that's extremely useful, because decisions taken in the past can also be judged in retrospect as having been false, which is useful, because you could say, don't do that again. Next time, take another decision. Stop mining fossil fuels and such. So, one of the things they did that's really fireworks, failure of a state to take appropriate action to protect the climate system from greenhouse gas emissions, including fossil fuel production. We like to drill for gas. Fossil fuel consumption. We still need the gas to heat our home. No, we need heat pumps. And the granting of fossil fuel exploration licenses. We're just fighting one at this moment by Juan Diaz. Or the provision of fossil fuel subsidies may constitute an international wrongful act, meaning they can be taken to law over that and to court over that, international court, and be punished, and might be attributable to that state. This is the part that says you can get a fine. Again, with a reference. Now, I looked up where the International Court of Justice is located. This is it. This is in The Hague. And in case you're interested, this is where the fossil fuel protests have been. So it's a walking distance, as I just showed. So that's really lovely. Now, if you go a little more south here, about here on the floor, is the climate I couldn't fit it on my laptop screen, is the climate ministry, and they also cut a nice tick, another tick. State may be responsible where, for example, it has failed to exercise due diligence, take care of your citizens, be careful, make sure that you take precautions of the strangest kind in this case, by not taking the necessarily regulatory and legislative measures, so rules and laws. Am I still there? Yeah. To limit the quantity of emissions caused by private actors. We've had a lot of right-wing governments, and they try to avoid to control the market. They give incredible leeway to commercial players, to industry. Because, oh, we have such specific problems. Yes, deal with them. That is your work. And you are a commercial organization. The market conditions change, so you change along. That's only common sense if you're an employer. I am self-employed. I will move with the market when it comes. When signal comes out, I go and study the crypto because that's my business and that's the market in which I am. So that makes sense. Anyhow, there's now a lot we can demand from them, actually. But this is international law. What does that have to do with Dutch law, the Dutch situation? Well, actually, every treaty in force is binding upon the parties, and they must produce it in good faith. Thank you. And that's the Vienna Convention Law of Treaties is basically the way we deal with treaties, so international agreements. And this is basically accepted everywhere, even in America. So indecisive politics are simply not excusable. It's against the law. The fact that they don't decide is against the law. The Klimasignoren said it, but this also says it already. And a party may not invoke the provisions of its internal law to get away from treaties, and that's also a very important one. You must implement it, and you cannot overrule it with local mumble-jumble. That may sound strange, but imagine making international agreements with countries that can just overrule the things if they feel like it, because they make their own laws. That wouldn't work, and that's why this rule is there. So we quote these sometimes. But judges know this too, of course. And so should civil servants. The problem is civil servants isn't evil, right? I mean, they're basically making our democracy work. So I applaud them for their work. They take decisions that they don't stand by from time to time, and I couldn't do that. I really think it's valuable what they do, but they're doing it from a very small focus, and they are not integrating climate change into their policies, and that's what's wrong. They should be doing that, and that's why we're pressuring them. So I said that already. So why do we do it with administrative law? First of all, to play the civil servants, the ones who take the actual decisions that influence our daily lives. I mean, they will give you parking tickets, but they might also give you a subsidiary grant. But also, it was just a practical matter. You don't need a lawyer. We have legal research in our team, but no lawyers. And a lot of logically thinking people who are scientists are pretty much accustomed to building evidence and showing that it's indeed correct. And the court fees are quite low. They are so low that you can do this as an individual. And that's one of the reasons I'm presenting this here. If you have a logical mind, if you're pissed about climate change, if you see something going wrong in your local government or in the national government, you have a right and you have the means that are reasonably accessible. So I would fight it in that case. And that's why I gave all these references to climate law. There's a lot more. But these are the main points that you can use to basically say you've done something really wrong. And another reason for administrative law is it doesn't depend on the politician's level of intelligence, their vision, courage, and their heart. It's handy to not have to rely on that, especially in the Netherlands. So how does this work? You have the... how much time do I have left? 20? Oh, wow. Usually I run out of time. So what we have been doing is pretty bold. We've been asking them to do something. We took the initiative. That's why they are a bit like what's happening here. They don't really respond. But you can submit your own request. We call that aanvraag. That's a legal term. I will get to a few small definitions later. You can you await the deadline, send a final notice, and then go to court to say, I want a decision on this. And if you've done it properly and followed the right procedures, the judge should rule in your favor. You can... It doesn't work. You can submit your view to... if somebody else has asked for a decision, we would like to go drilling in somewhere in the Waddenzee, for example. You can submit a view to that, because those procedures tend to be public. They are on a website. You can follow those, and we do that too now. We could use a lot of help actually doing the work, by the way. In every specific situation, there are specifics, and we could really use help with that. Help. Feel free to let me know. But you can basically respond to somebody else's request and add the climate viewpoint, and they have to weigh that heavily. And you can also add the international law so that they know they can't go over that. Also, when a decision has been taken, that's what we're also doing at the moment for a Juan Díaz case, you can just respond to it if you are belanghebbend. I'll get to that, because there are a few rules. And that's called, this phase is called making objection, bezwaar. Then you go to court, which is beroep, and then you might even go to a higher court, Supreme Court, which is called hoge beroep. So those are the terms. It can take from weeks to years. We do a VOO request, an information request, usually takes a few weeks. They will try to stretch, though, especially during the holiday. But it's mostly spent waiting. You need to get it out of your mind, so you shouldn't be on your own with that. You should discuss this, because otherwise you go mad. I know. But it's mostly spent waiting and occasionally responding to a letter. Usually it takes them 4 months to respond, 3 months to respond, and I will respond the same day, because it's clear. I mean, I don't have to look at the Dutch law, because international law applies. If you go against international law, I don't have to look what rules you prove. Thanks to the Vienna Convention, Article 27 that I just showed. Also, governments have deadlines. So that's usually 8 weeks, sometimes 2 weeks. But the courts do not. So that's one reason it takes longer. The courts are overmanned. Because basically, government isn't doing its work. Therefore, the courts are being brought in. And that means they're overstretched. And in the phases of bezwaar and beroep, you have the right to be heard. You don't have to take it, but you can basically visit the judge or visit the ministry and talk to them about this. That's a good place to frighten them with facts. Confront them with facts is what I meant. An aanvraag, that's the term I said, if you take the initiative, that's formally verzoek van belanghebbende te besluiten. A little longer, it's in the Algemene Wet Bestuursrecht. This is in Dutch, I'm sorry. Other countries have similar structures. So you will need to translate. It makes no sense for me to using English terms for something that is principally Dutch. Besluit is een bestuurlijke beslissing met rechtsgevolg. So government takes a decision, and it must be a legal act. And a legal act means somebody shall or shall not, and there may also be a company or that sort of thing. So a few things to be careful about. Politics is out of the question. Judges will not rule on subjective issues. So the structure of government is basically there are very static boundaries drawn by law, and within that, politics can freely make its choices. That's also why they're trying to broaden their range of choice, because they don't like being squeezed into an ever tighter squeeze hole. But that's what you get when you defer a problem that piles up, like climate change. Policy are internal guidelines that the government used to say, well, we have two opposing views on a decision that needs to be taken. How do we generally handle these things? Generally is here the key word. So if something is a rule of how to deal with such balancing acts, you can't ask for it. But you can ask in your specific case. Say that you are a shareholder of Shell. That's very easy. It's a few, $30 or something. Say you are a shareholder of Shell. Then you have a financial interest of going to the government to say, I would like my financial investments to be safe in the future, therefore I would like to know the carbon budget of Shell. This is another thing you could have a lot of fun with. I certainly advise this. We're doing it at the national level, but we're probably also going to do this for different parties. I mean, the most damaging parties are usually the ones that are publicly with publicly traded shares, and you can get them and then basically have an interest from that. Because belanghebbende is an important, that's a drempel. That's a minimum requirement you need to meet. You must have an interest in the decision, and there's some rules are being applied for that. They are abbreviated to the letters FOPERA, which basically means it must be a factual decision. Well, that's easy with climate change. It must be objectively measurable. Well, we have a lot of people measuring this now, so there's no problem there. It must be personal, meaning I must be hit by it. It must affect me, which is difficult to show in climate change. It must be not be on behalf of someone else. That's also involved, but so that's difficult. And it must be an actual problem. It must play now. Now, that's another difficult one. Thank you. The Aarhus Treaty deals with those because it says that it tries to protect the right of every person of present and future generations. I don't know how they could now apply to a court case. It now have a court case to protect their future rights. So this really helps to live in an environment adequate to his or her health and well-being. There's something missing here, I know, but that's because it's an old treaty. And this gives you access to court, access to information, and also influence on decision-taking. That's pretty much the goal of Aarhus. So most of the FOPERA constraints fall away. I only drop the rechtstreeks. The thing you're asking for must be directly related to your interest. And your interest might be having a share, having something in the Chamber of Commerce, description of your company. But it might also just be, thanks to Aarhus, that you as three neighbors got together and said, we form a group that fights climate change. That's enough. I mean, it's more difficult to prove that that's what you're doing. But, well, you send each other a few emails, you print them. Basically, that already shows what you're about. But this gets hairy at some point. It gets less certain. But if you have a company, you can just edit the records at the Chamber of Commerce. That's a very easy action. And you're done. That's also not very expensive. So there are many ways. You do not have to be an NGO for this. And you do not have to be a legal person. So a BV or NV in the Netherlands, or limited. And that's what people often don't know. And that's important to realize. This is the democratic problem. This is democracy acting for the people, to get your right when you deserve it and when the government is doing something wrong. So that's what we're taking very literally. There are a few obligations to the government that are useful to know. They must collect relevant information. Climate change is very often involved, and if it is, they must collect information about it. They might forget that from time to time. You might want to check that. I'm also saying this because it's recorded, and I hope that the government is going to watch this, because that will save us a lot of struggles with them, because I would rather prevent going to court, but they make it so necessary. They must stick to legislation, so to laws and to rules. They cannot make up their own mind unless the law tells them that it's a balancing act and that they usually employ policy. If there's no policy, they get stuck, but they still have to execute the law. So that's why we are pushing from below. And they must form a timely decision based on logical reasoning. Some of the people in this audience might be better than the average civil servant on that area, so you might want to check their answers. Like the example I gave, that's a disgrace in terms of science, in terms of accuracy, in terms of logic. And they have to be zorgvuldig, conscientious. They have to be, and when they fail these things, they haven't been. And that is a procedural fault, and that means you could say the procedure must be blocked. So you took a decision, the procedure for getting to the decision was wrong, therefore you must destroy that decision. So we're doing that now for a drilling request that's going on in the Waddenzee. The drilling has taken place, but the procedure was still wrong, and we want them to learn that for the future. So are we hacking the law? Don't know. I think we're just using laws it's intended. But we're doing a few creative things, and that can, from time to time, be really useful. The people to do that must be detailed mongers, they must be creative, they must be able to connect the dots, see through the abstractions that other people conveniently assume, but that's what we do all the time. So I'd say that most hackers would fit that profile, and if you have clarity of writing, not prosaic, but accurate, that's very helpful. Sorry, documentation writing, I know most people hate it, but it's very useful here, it's really helpful. So it's important that what judges do is called marginal checking, marginal verification. Could the government, if they look at the decision, could the government possibly, in a reasonable way, have come to this decision? A decision to not respond to their climate responsibilities does not fall under that. I can't imagine a judge ever saying, yeah, but they don't have to look at the climate, because judges really want this arranged because they see the law and they know it's an obligation. And rightly so. I mean, it should be. It has to be. So hop on to poor decision-taking, attack your local government, attack fossil mining permits like we do, or join us. Intensive agriculture was mentioned earlier on. I fully agree with that. The methane out exhaust and the nitrate out exhaust is terrible, especially in the Netherlands. The intensive farmer hardly produces more, and it's so much more harmful than doing it, for example, organically or somewhere closer to it. So we are starting, and we're doing that for mining permits now, to give sort of general outlines with what sort of legal foundations there are. We use our legal researchers for that. Thank you. And I'm on time, so that's good. And we're basically doing that so that in any specific procedure, you can dig up the documentation, read it, and see what applies, and send a letter to complaints to make that as easy as possible. We're trying that now, and it seems to work. It seems that we've done most of the work for doing this. Although climate law develops so quickly that we need to adapt it from time to time. Sorry, I thought I had skipped to the next one. Very useful, people spitting through government documents, spotting failures. There are many, especially where the climate is concerned. And people who want to take on such action, I've mentioned that several times. People handling this business, and mentioned that too. If you happen to be involved with an NGO, we are not an NGO. We are an informal group that isn't registered. Sometimes it's useful to have an NGO, for example, to step to the European Court of Justice. We need an NGO for that, and we might need a lawyer as well. You might also have an interest in LLM. Maybe we should be able to search climate law. And tools for carbon budget tracking, connecting it to the upcoming ESA satellites that are going to measure CO2 would be great, would be really useful, because it's so accurate that you could point at a place where the exhaust is and whether it's natural or man-made. So it's going to be really useful. Government is facing for harsh times. And they should, because they've been deferring it for 50 years. Club of Rome, 1971, 72. It's ancient. I'm even more ancient, but a little extra, if you don't mind. We also have an idea for a case against the European Central Bank. What the European Central Bank does is they basically make money available. Just say, nah, there be money. That's fiat money. Fiat money is a pun on fiat lux, there be light. So fiat money is created, we want money, we throw it into the world, and we do that via a money market, and investors take the money from those money markets and pay it back later with the base interest that you see on the news every now and then. And an investor does that when they think they can make a profit on the money. So they invest it, and they calculate a risk profile, and they see what the proceeds usually are, and based on that they say, yeah, on average, this will be beneficial, and maybe we do it often enough, then on average we make money. So that's sort of how the system works. More money tomorrow, but if you're interested. But what they could do very easily is say, we have this market of abstract money that is not ear-tagged for a purpose, but it has a very strong differential impact on climate change. Let's split that. Let's have a fossil money market, and let's have one that's purely sustainable, that can go ahead. Gradually remove the money from that market and gradually put it into the other one. Maybe cobalt, maybe not, whatever you want. Increase the base interest rate so that the risk profile for fossil fuel mining becomes, and fossil fuel industries in general, becomes higher, and reduce the base interest rate for the sustainable stuff, so that innovation may be riskier but isn't felt as risky because the known burden of the money, the borrowing cost, are lower. So that the overall estimate is, gosh, we're going to make money on solar panels and we're not going to do it with pumping up oil. Let's move our money there. Because that's what we want. That is the final way to get financial flows solving this sort of stuff. So I believe the world is still makeable. No reason for apathy, no reason for anxiety, no reason for aggression. There is a reason for getting to action, and I hope I've convinced you that you have the possibilities, you have the tools, especially if you have a hacker mindset, I think you have the tools. And I think it's valuable, and I think most of us would agree to that. In October, please vote for someone's mind, not someone's gut. I mean, you do not want somebody's guttural spills on the table. We've seen that for the last 2 years, and it was ugly. Good. That's what I wanted to say. This is a WhatsApp group. The link is also below the page for this talk. But if you want to talk further, contact me there. Always happy to talk this stuff. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Rick, for your interesting talk about this ways how we can deal with governments here. We have a few minutes left for a Q&A. We have a Signal Angel here. Maybe there is already something piling up, but I will also give the opportunity for people in the room to ask questions. There is microphones. You can queue up, exactly. But let's start with the Signal Angel. Is there a question already there?
From the internet currently?
Not yet, apparently. Then, for you?
Hi. Hi. Thank you for your very interesting talk. I wanted to ask a question, but actually I wanted to invite everyone here to come to our action training that we will be giving in the library.
Extinction Rebellion?
Sorry?
Extinction Rebellion?
Yes, from Extinction Rebellion. And it will be on Sunday, 3 p.m. And if you do that action training, you might also like to join us in somewhat more rebellious activities, such as on September the 13th, when we will be blocking the A12 again against fossil subsidies.
Yeah, you know, the College of Human Rights in the Netherlands has said that this is within the boundaries of the right to demonstrate.
It is within the...
Yeah, but the College for Human Rights in the Netherlands has actually spoken out on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there more questions? Please proceed to the microphone.
Yes, you said that there was a list of... is there a list of things that you can make subjections to for procedures for a mining request or that kind of things that we can all help with these things?
That's the Signal group, basically. So if you want to get in touch, do it there.
Only
is that
Signal.
What you mean?
Yeah, but it's only through Signal, so...
Oh, I can hand you my email address afterwards. Okay, yeah. No problem. Yeah,
okay,
sure.
Thanks.
Yeah?
Are there any other questions or comments? Maybe from the Signal group now?
No new questions online. No.
It's a lot of information. It's not easy.
So maybe here?
I'm wondering if you've connected with the rights of nature movement at all.
With the what?
Like the global rights of nature movement. It's a global movement to get different nature bodies recognized as having human rights, and therefore then it's much easier to use those rights to stop governments or private organizations from harming that nature body. So for example, it's very big with rivers, and then it makes it very hard to pollute the river. And there's a really nice network of lawyers and NGOs and activists working on this that I'm connected to. And yeah, maybe we can talk after. I think you could find an NGO and a lawyer through them.
Could you either send there, or I can hand you my email address afterwards. I don't think I included it on the slide. Yeah, thank you. It's always interesting to make such connections, to reach out. Also because I think we're the only ones doing this by administrative law. First, because of need, but now we see it actually makes sense. And it would be good if other countries also did it. That's another reason I'm here, being streamed out to the world and to the governments of the world. Yeah.
Thank you very much for the talk. It was very interesting, and I find it a very useful thing to think that for like milieu, for like environment, you can actually take steps as a democratic citizen to have influence there. What popped to my mind was, can you also apply this in other areas? So I like I said, I really love the environmental part, but you said you were also working on crypto and privacy, for example. Enforcement of privacy is very difficult. There is, by my knowledge, not a lot of good privacy definitions in national law, but there are some on international law. Is it possible, for example, to make cases again, I don't know, ring doorbells or things like that, or maybe government policies in terms of privacy using those kinds of legislation?
Good question. Quite a bit of this is shady. The things I've shown, the climate hearing in the International Court of Justice was specifically about climate. They also speak about other things, and apparently you have something in mind. Of course, we have the GDPR as well in Europe. Let's talk about that later on. Maybe, yeah. The things I said about going to speaking out to the government and saying, I would like this to be established, it's the sort of thing that you can just do. You can ask, as a company, you can just ask, I would like to run around this grass at 180 kilometers per hour, and if you ask that, they will say, well, are you legally permitted? And they will say yes or no. So basically, whatever you have in mind, you can ask for. Also, when you do your tax return, a sort of thing, you basically also do that as a citizen, so citizens can also do this. And also the procedures of then objecting, so bezwaar, and taking to court, beroep, and hoge beroep, Supreme Court, those things all apply. And sometimes there's a different route, but these things are all usable. Why I said it's shady is that it's one of those areas where privacy is a subjective matter. We don't think so. But other people have other opinions, and this is how democracy works, right? You have opposing opinions, you need to make a balancing act, and that's the task of the government, so we can live side by side and not get in each other's hair. So I'm always willing to talk more about this, so pick me up there or there afterwards.
Yes, yeah, we have to cut it short now. Thank you for all your questions. A big applause for Rick van der Rijn for this very important topic. Thank you for being here and giving us this information. Thank you for asking questions. Rick is open to talk to you now after the talk. That's for this.